From the Voice of America, this is Learning English Weekend. I'm Katie Weaver. It is Sunday, March 13th. Christopher Jones Cruz is on vacation. Today on the show, we continue our series, The Making of a Nation. This week, we take you back to 1914. We also hear from our English words expert, Anna Mateo. She'll tell us all about the word boycott, its meaning and history. And John Russell will come on later with another report from the world of higher education. But first, we have some world news. As many as 1,000 refugees are flowing into the area along Greece's border with Macedonia every day. Many of them are sick. All of them are hungry. And tensions are growing. Learning English's Kathleen Strzok reports on how the families are coping.
For the refugees living in a camp along the border of Greece and Macedonia, each day begins with hope. The refugees hope that the Macedonians will open the border. They hope that it won't rain. They hope that they have enough food. Hope is what brings between 500 and 1,000 new refugees to the area every day. The refugees' hopes were high last week. The refugees said they believed a meeting between the European Union and Turkish leaders would bring good news. Few of the nearly 16,000 refugees living in the camp understand that the EU and Turkey have reached a limited agreement. The EU will take one Syrian refugee from Turkey for each Syrian refugee that Turkey takes from Greece. EU leaders will meet soon to discuss the plan. The plan has angered UN refugee chiefs and human rights groups. The UN's refugee agency said a blanket return may violate international law. If EU and Turkish officials go forward with the plan, it could spark anger in the camp. The few refugees who understand the plans say they will resist. One refugee, a 32-year-old father of two children, said, "There's war in Syria, there will be war here. I didn't risk the journey here, a sea crossing with my wife and kids, to be taken back." Tensions are high in the camp. Many children are sick. The children's parents are angry about how few doctors are in the camp. "We queue for hours to see anyone," said a woman from Syria. She has three young children. The youngest, age 2, has been sick for days. In the last few weeks, fights have broken out while refugees wait for food. A French medical charity called Doctors Without Borders has given food to refugees. But it is difficult serving everyone in the camp. The charity asks other organizations to help. A local Greek charity called Praxis works in the camp but does not have enough employees. A Praxis worker said, "What is happening here is disgracing Europe. It is shaming Europe." UNHCR, the United Nations Refugee Agency, has a small presence in the camp. The number of police in the camp has increased. One policeman said he worries that the refugees will become violent when they learn they are not going to the EU. "We don't want a repeat of what happened the other day," he said. He was referring to the February 29th clash between refugees and Macedonian border guards. Refugees shook the fence, blocking their way. Guards shot rubber bullets and tear gas to keep them back. Last Wednesday, refugees and locals complained that police told them to stop selling food. A Syrian refugee from Aleppo, who has been selling soft drinks, said, "I think they want to make the refugees even more uncomfortable, to pressure them, so when the time comes to move them away, they might not resist." I'm Kathleen Strzok.
The former president of Brazil, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, is having some serious legal problems. Learning English's Mario Ritter has our report.
Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the former president of Brazil, was charged this week with the crime of money laundering. Officials say they have evidence the former president and his family benefited from an unlawful real estate deal. That deal affected thousands of Brazilian families. Lead prosecutor Cássio Concerino explained families lost their apartments and lost their chances at being homeowners. Instead of apartments going to families, the real estate was destined for the former president and his family. He added Da Silva and his family were under investigation for a year. The prosecutors allege that Da Silva and his family were given real estate. Da Silva denies any wrongdoing. He said he is not the owner of the apartment in the coastal city of Guarujá. Money laundering charges have also been brought against the former president's wife and one of his sons. A conviction could result in a prison term of 13 years. The judge in charge of the case must decide whether to accept the charges and move forward with the case. Da Silva also faces other legal problems. There are charges and accusations that he accepted free work on his home in exchange for political favors and benefits. Da Silva governed Brazil from 2003 to 2010. He left office with record-high popularity of close to 80%. I'm Mario Ritter.
Now it is time for the Higher Education Report. The United States wants more students from sub-Saharan Africa to study at American universities. Learning English's John Russell tells us why that is and how the U.S. is trying to attract them.
The United States is looking for sub-Saharan African students to study at American universities. There were about 1 million international students studying at U.S. colleges and universities during the 2014 to 2015 academic year. Fewer than 3% of those international students came from sub-Saharan Africa. Africa is home to 6 of the top 10 fastest-growing countries in the world. But it is difficult for even the most motivated students to succeed in African universities. Classes are overcrowded. Teachers often go on strike to protest low pay and poor working conditions. There is little opportunity to do advanced research. But studying outside of Africa can be even harder. The U.S. government wants to change that. Marcus Jadot is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Industry and Analysis. He is leading the first educational trade mission to Africa this week. They should consider studying in the U.S. because of the innovative approach to education that we take in the United States, because international businesses are looking for the best qualified, best prepared prospective employees, and we certainly believe that it enriches education back home in the U.S., Jadot said. He is traveling with representatives of 25 U.S. colleges and universities. The delegation reflects the wide variety of higher education institutions in the United States. The group includes representatives from two-year community colleges and universities that offer specialized advanced degrees. The team wants to recruit students and build relationships with African universities. Many of the universities who have traveled with us on this mission are including scholarships as a part of the conversation with students here, Jadot explained. At each stop, the assistant secretary will join local government officials and academic leaders at an education fair. The delegation's first event was an education fair for South Africans. Jadot spoke about the academic support services and technology offered by America's world-class universities. His message attracted a long line of South African high school students. Boneng Mofokeng says he is hoping to go to law school at Michigan State University. "I want to see the world, and our country's economy is not good. Maybe I can have a better life over there," he said. Jadot says it is not just the African students who benefit from studying in the United States. The American host institutions also benefit from the increased diversity. He says Africa offers a number of opportunities for U.S. institutions seeking to globalize their campuses. From South Africa, the delegation heads to Ivory Coast and Ghana. I'm John Russell.
From VOA Learning English, this is Words and Their Stories. Each week, we report on words and expressions commonly used in American English. We explain their meanings, their roots, and how they are currently used. Today, we talk about a word that comes to English through the Irish. That word is boycott. Boycott can be used as both a noun and a verb. As a verb, boycott means to refuse to do something as a form of protest. People who boycott something are often looking for social, economic, or political change. As a noun, the word boycott has a somewhat different meaning. People stop using goods or services during a boycott until changes are made. In fact, that is just how the word entered the English language. It began with a man's name. Back in the mid-1800s, a young man named Charles Boycott served in the British Army. After retiring, he worked as a land agent for the owner of a large country estate in Ireland. At that time, Ireland was under British rule. It was Boycott's job to collect money from tenant farmers who grew crops on the estate. The farmers growing crops on the land demanded lower rents. Boycott refused. Not only did he refuse to lower their rents, he evicted some farmers, meaning he kicked them out of their homes. All these issues, evictions, high rents, and absentee landlords, caused a dispute between Boycott and the local community. In particular, Boycott clashed with a man named Michael Davitt. In 1879, Davitt founded a group called the Land League. The League organized Irish resistance to absent and abusive landlords. It sought to help tenant farmers by securing fair rents and other rights of occupancy. Davitt suggested to the farmers that instead of attacking Captain Boycott, they should simply refuse to do business with him. This form of protest proved to be very effective. Boycott's workers and servants refused to carry out his orders. The crops in his fields went bad. They rotted on the vine because nobody would harvest them. Reports even say some local businesses would not take his money. The community turned their back on the Boycott family, and they were forced to move. By the end of 1880, some British newspapers began using Boycott's name when reporting on a protest of unfair methods or actions. The usage quickly spread. The term boycott crossed the Atlantic Ocean and landed in American newspapers. By the late 1880s, the New York Times newspaper was reporting on boycotts. The word was generally used to describe labor protests against businesses. I'm Anna Mateo.
In 1914, Europe exploded into the First World War. It was a war no nation really wanted, but no nation seemed able to stop it. The assassination of Austria's Archduke Franz Ferdinand in the city of Sarajevo was the spark that set off the explosion. This week, in our series, The Making of a Nation, Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about the war and how it affected the United States under President Woodrow Wilson.
The Austrian Archduke was murdered by Serbian nationalists. They opposed Austrian control of their homeland. After the assassination, Austria declared war on Serbia. One of Serbia's allies was Russia. Russia agreed to help Serbia in any war against Austria. Austria had allies too. The most important was Germany. Germany wanted Russia to stay out of the war. When Russia refused, Germany declared war on Russia. Then Germany declared war on Russia's close ally, France. Britain entered the war a few days later when Germany violated the neutrality of Belgium.
One nation after another entered the conflict to protect its friends or to honor its treaties. Within a week, most of Europe was at war. On one side were the Central Powers, Germany and Austria-Hungary. On the other side were the Triple Entente allies, France, Britain, and Russia. Many other nations took sides. Bulgaria and Turkey joined the Central Powers. Italy, Romania, Portugal, and Greece joined the Allies.
The United States hoped to stay out of the war. President Wilson immediately declared American neutrality. He said, "It is a war with which we have nothing to do, whose causes cannot touch us." Most Americans agreed with President Wilson. They did not want to get involved in the fighting. However, many found it difficult to remain neutral in their hearts. Some Americans had family roots in Germany. They supported the Central Powers. A greater number of Americans had family roots in Britain or France. They supported the Allies. Yet the official American policy was neutrality. The United States planned to continue to trade with both sides.
Germany and Austria expected a quick victory in the war. They were caught between two powerful enemies, Russia and France. But German military leaders were not worried. They had a battle plan they were sure would succeed. The German generals planned to strike quickly at France with most of the German army. They expected to defeat France in a short time and then turn to fight Russia. In this way, the German army would not have to fight both enemies at the same time.
At first, the plan worked. 2 million German soldiers swept across Belgium and into France. They rushed forward toward Paris, hoping for a fast victory. But the German commanders made a mistake. They pushed their men too fast. When British and French forces struck back outside Paris, the tired and worn German soldiers could not hold their positions. The battle was fierce and unbelievably bloody. In the end, the Germans were forced to withdraw. The German withdrawal gave the Allies time to prepare strong defenses. There was no chance now for a quick German victory. Instead, it would be a long war, with Germany and Austria facing enemies on two sides. Britain and France were on the west, Russia was on the east.
The Allies took immediate steps to reduce Germany's trade with the rest of the world. The British Navy began seizing war supplies found on neutral ships sailing toward German ports. It then expanded its efforts to block food exports to Germany. The blockade by Britain and the other Allies was very successful. Germany faced possible starvation. Its navy was not strong enough to break the blockade with surface ships. Its only hope was to break the blockade with another naval weapon, submarines. Germany announced that it would use its submarines to sink any ship that came near the coast of Britain. The threat included ships from neutral nations that tried to continue trading with the Allies.
The United States and other neutral nations immediately protested the German announcement. They said it was a clear violation of international law. When a German submarine sank a British ship in the Irish Sea, one of the victims was an American citizen. A few weeks later, an American oil ship was damaged during a sea battle between British Navy ships and a German submarine. Then came the most serious incident of all. It involved a British passenger ship called the Lusitania. The Lusitania was sailing from New York City to Britain when it was attacked by a German submarine. The Lusitania sank in 18 minutes. 1,200 persons were killed. 129 were Americans.
The sinking of the Lusitania shocked and horrified the American people. They called it mass murder. They turned against Germany. President Wilson warned that he might declare war on Germany if Germany continued to sink civilian ships. Germany did not want war with the United States. It already faced a strong fight against the European allies. It promised not to sink any more civilian ships without warning, and it offered regrets for the Lusitania incident.
President Wilson accepted Germany's apology. Like most Americans, he hoped to stay out of the bloody European struggle. And he also knew that the record of the Allies was not completely clean. For example, he was troubled by reports of mass hunger in Germany. He and other Americans felt the British food blockade was cruel. They also were shocked by the way British forces brutally crushed a rebellion in Ireland at the time. Most of all, the American people were sickened by reports of what was happening on the battlefields of Europe. The armies were using poison gas and other terrible weapons. Soldiers on both sides were dying by the millions. The war had become a bloodbath.
The United States had a presidential election in 1916. President Wilson won the nomination of the Democratic Party to seek re-election. Democrats around the country shouted their support with these words, "He kept us out of war." Wilson himself did not like the words. He felt it raised false hopes. But people continued to say it because they did not want war.
The Republican Party nominated Supreme Court Justice Charles Evans Hughes as its candidate for president. Hughes was a moderate Republican. He supported a number of social reforms. Like Wilson, Hughes promised to keep the United States neutral. However, one of his supporters was former President Theodore Roosevelt, and Roosevelt called for strong American policies that could lead to war. Roosevelt's words led many Americans to see Wilson as the candidate of peace and Hughes as the candidate of war.
Voting in the presidential election was very close. At first, it seemed Hughes had won. He went to bed on election night, believing he would be America's next president. But voting results later that night confirmed Wilson as the winner. The election was so close, the Republicans did not accept defeat for 2 weeks. Woodrow Wilson had won another term. During that term, he would find it increasingly difficult to honor the words of the campaign, "He kept us out of war." Finally, he would find it impossible. The United States entered World War I while Woodrow Wilson was president. That will be our story next week.
I'm Katie Weaver. That's all the time we have today on Learning English Weekend. Join us again tomorrow for more news and information on the Learning English As It Is podcast. Thanks for listening.